Welcome to Cameco's first quarter conference call to discuss the financial results. With us today on the call are Tim Gitzel, President and CEO, Grant Isaac, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Ken Seitz, Senior Vice President and Chief Commercial Officer, Bob Steen, Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, and Alice Wong, Senior Vice President and Chief Corporate Officer. Tim will begin with comments on the quarter and the industry. Then Grant will comment on the Canada Revenue Agency tax case. After, we will open it up for your questions. Today's conference call is open to all members of the investment community, including the media. During the Q&A session, please limit yourself to two questions and then return to the queue. Please note that this conference call will include forward-looking information, which is based on a number of assumptions, and actual results could differ materially. Please refer to our annual information form and MD&A for more information about the factors that could cause these different results and the assumptions we have made. With that, I will turn it over to Tim.
Well, thank you, Rochelle, and welcome to everyone who has joined us on the call today as we discuss Cameco's first quarter results. I'll start by briefly discussing our results and then move on to our strategy and our view of the market. Then, before opening it up for Q&A, I've asked our Chief Financial Officer, Grant Isaac, to talk about the Canada Revenue Agency, or the CRA, litigation issue that seemed to draw a lot of attention last quarter. You may remember that last quarter we gave some guidance on what we were expecting for this quarter, which is something we don't usually do. However, in this case, we felt it was necessary as a result of some unusual first quarter items we were aware of that would result in significantly lower earnings than the same period last year. And that is indeed what we have seen occur. Our adjusted net earnings this quarter were $27 million compared to $121 million during the same period last year. We were expecting this primarily as a result of very low uranium deliveries in the first quarter and lower earnings from Bruce Power. We delivered 3.1 million pounds less this quarter than in Q1 of 2012. But as is often the case, our deliveries are lumpy throughout the year, and in 2013, as in previous years, about 60% of our deliveries will be made in the third and fourth quarters. With regard to Bruce Power, they had a large number of outage days scheduled for this quarter, which also impacted our results. I also want to remind you that our accounting for Bruce Power changed as of January 1st. IFRS now requires we use the equity method of accounting as opposed to proportionate consolidation. As a result, we now report our share of their earnings before taxes as a single line item on our earnings statement. As I've said in the past, our performance in relation to annual guidance is a more accurate representation of the state of the company than quarterly performance, and I can report that we are on track to deliver on our sales, revenue, and production guidance for the year. Production is one area where we were very strong this quarter, producing 5.9 million pounds, which is 23% more than the same period last year. Inkai was one of the big drivers of the increase. We've been able to bring on new well fields there, which helped us maintain higher feed grades, and we were able to make improvements to the overall extraction process. At Cigar Lake, we continue our journey toward first production. The Cigar Lake team is making solid progress, continuing to complete their tasks safely and according to plan. By mid-year, we should be reporting first commissioning in ore, so stay tuned for that. We also had a number of news items to report this quarter. First, our acquisition of NuChem closed, and we recorded $131 million in revenue and $4 million in gross profit in the first quarter. For the year, we expect to report gross profit margins for NuChem between 3 and 5%. The second news item came from the provincial government in our home province of Saskatchewan. A change to the uranium royalty structure was announced that should prove beneficial for Cameco and the other uranium producers working in the province. Tiered royalties will now be based on profits rather than on revenue and should provide more certainty related to our large investment projects in northern Saskatchewan, where most of our operations are located today. It's difficult to quantify what the benefit to Cameco will be in the near term until some of the variables are sorted out. but we do expect the change to be a benefit over the long term. And the last piece of news came from the Canadian federal government, which announced the finalization of Canada's Nuclear Cooperation Agreement, or NCA, with India. This is important since it will allow us to take advantage of the large market opportunity India represents for the nuclear industry and will allow us to deliver Canadian uranium there. India currently has 20 operating reactors and 7 under construction. They expect to have a total of 34 reactors operating by 2022, which is a huge amount of growth over the next decade, so we were very happy to see the NCA finalized. But India is just one of the growth drivers in the nuclear industry. Countries like China, Russia, South Korea, and the United Arab Emirates are also pursuing rapid development and expansion of their nuclear programs. China alone has 28 reactors under construction today, with 6 of those planned to come online this year. One already has. Unit 1 at Ningde just came online in April. We're expecting this growth to result in an increase of uranium consumption from 170 million pounds today to about 220 million pounds by 2022, an average annual growth rate of 3%. That's why you see us working to increase our annual supply from 23.3 million pounds we will produce this year to 36 million pounds per year by 2018 so that we can be ready to fill that demand. And we believe that going forward, our production will be needed more than ever. As everyone knows, there's been a significant gap between production and consumption for many years that has historically been filled by secondary supplies. But we know those secondary supplies are diminishing, particularly with the end of the Russian highly enriched uranium commercial agreement this year, which will remove about 24 million pounds per year from the market, which equates to more than Cameco's entire annual production. Add to that the uranium price where it is today and where it has been for some time, which has not helped incent producers to bring on new production. We've seen numerous projects canceled or delayed that would have helped fill the future supply-demand gap. And we at Cameco are not immune. Post-Fukushima, the uranium price has not recovered as quickly as we thought it would, and as a result, we've had to adjust our plans to remain competitive. That meant making the changes you saw us implement over the last 6 months, pulling back on our growth plans, spreading our capital spend over a longer period of time, focusing on brownfield projects in stable jurisdictions, streamlining our organization, and reducing our administrative costs. I believe these are the right decisions for Cameco until we see some significant positive movement in the market. And I know we've been waiting for such movement for longer than might have been expected, but we are confident it will happen. The fundamentals of the industry, increasing demand and decreasing supply, require it. The question remains when, and the answer is that while we don't know the exact timing, we do know that the uranium price can move very quickly in response to market developments like we saw in 2007 and again in 2010. Meanwhile, the mechanics of our industry and our ability to react are quite slow. Regulatory processes take time. Construction takes time. Commissioning takes time. So we continue to watch the major catalysts that we believe will spur significant movement in our industry, things like reactor restarts in Japan, the end of the HEU agreement, continued supply deferrals and cancellations, a return to long-term contracting, and new reactors coming online in China and India. But we also continue to be responsive to what we see going on now and are taking strong action today to be leaner and more efficient in order to remain a profitable, low-cost producer and to return value to our shareholders. With that, I'm going to stop and turn it over to Grant Isaac to discuss the CRA issue. Grant?
Thanks, Tim. We wanted to spend a bit of time on the CRA issue today because there have been a lot of questions on it since we released our annual MD&A, and we wanted to provide more information on today's call and also in our Q1 MD&A. As most of you are likely aware, since 2008, Canada Revenue Agency has disputed our offshore marketing company structure and the related transfer pricing methodology we used for certain intercompany uranium sale and purchase agreements between 2003 and 2007. Although we can't predict the outcome of the case for certain, we expect it to be substantially resolved in our favor and that the ultimate resolution will not be material to our financial position, our results of operations, and our cash flows in the years of resolution. In very general terms, there are two key subjects at issue: the nature of the structure itself and the associated prices. With regard to the structure, we believe that it was established in accordance with sound business principles and in accordance with relevant laws and regulations. We employ an offshore marketing subsidiary since the majority of our customers are located outside of Canada, and so are important sources of uranium supply. This subsidiary is an existing corporation that has a proper and active board of directors and an experienced general manager. We believe it is appropriate. This brings us to the second issue, the pricing, which we also believe to be generally compliant. The CRA requires that prices be based upon arm's length terms and conditions, so we use the methodology preferred by the CRA. This means that at the time the arrangements were put in place, the prices between Cameco and our subsidiary reflected market conditions, or in other words, they are prices that an independent third party would reasonably agree to. As a result, we believe Cameco establishes prices that generally complied with the required transfer pricing rules. So we are confident that we will be successful in our case. However, we have taken a cumulative tax provision of $65 million to date, which we think is reasonable based on an analysis of our contract portfolio and where there may be a disagreement over transfer prices. That is the extent of the issue in general terms, which I want to remind you is not a new issue. This has been ongoing since 2008, and there have been no fact changes since we first disclosed it. We believe the reason for the increased interest recently was the $27 million payment we made to the CRA here in the first quarter of 2013. But reported in February, our Q4 results in February. As we mentioned at that time, the reason for that payment is that the Canadian Income Tax Act requires certain companies to pay 50% of the tax associated with disputed reassessments, including interest and penalties. Until Q1 2013, we had not been required to make any significant cash tax payments due to the availability of elective deductions and tax loss carryovers. So why $27 million specifically? Well, at the moment, the CRA has reassessed years 2003 to 2007 and have claimed approximately $1.3 billion in income for these years as taxable in Canada. If this amount were taken into income in Canada, it would result in a tax expense of about $380 million. Once elective deductions and tax loss carryovers are applied, as well as interest and installment penalties, the result in cash payable is approximately $54 million, of which 50% is $27 million, the amount that we paid in Q1 of 2013. We expect to recover this amount. Many of you have asked the next logical question: what about post-2007? Quite simply, we have not been reassessed for any years beyond 2007. But with our Q1 MD&A, we attempt to answer this question that you have asked frequently. So if we look at the overall picture from 03 to 2012, using the methodology we believe that the CRA will continue to apply, and we assume that years 2008 to 2012 will be reassessed, we estimate that the CRA would reassess income of approximately $4.9 billion in total. If this is taken into income in Canada, it would result in a tax expense of approximately $1.4 billion. Cash taxes payable would be between $800 and $850 million, not including interest and installment penalties, which would be material. We would be responsible for remitting 50% of the resulting amount. I should point out that these are estimates only based on our understanding of the CRA methodology, and that actual amounts will depend on the income reassessed in each year and the availability of elective deductions and tax loss carryovers. But I want to emphasize that we do not believe this will be the likely outcome, or that the ultimate resolution of this matter will be material to our financial position, results of operations, and cash flows in the years of resolution. Based on our view of the likely outcome of this case, we expect to recover the amounts remitted. I hope this helps to clarify the issue. Unfortunately, we can't tell you any more than we have today or what is in our MD&A, as this is a case currently before the courts and it would be inappropriate to do so. We will update you as any material changes arise, but we don't expect to have anything to report until there is a decision. At the moment, the 2003 assessment is expected to go to trial in the fall of 2014, which could mean a tax court decision in 2015. And with that, I'll turn it back to Tim.
So thank you, Grant, and with that, we'd be pleased to answer any questions you might have.